The following podcast is a Super Network production and spin-off of the King Zone podcast with the King Zone's Book Club podcast, hosted by Super Marcy.
We know what goes on in these parts near Jerusalem's lot.
And Stephen T. Boltz.
I love this stuff, this world building that he does with literally one sentence. Mm.
It contains adult themes.
Must either be mad or run the risk of becoming so.
Coarse language.
There are huge rats in the wall.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Prepare to take a deep dive into the literary works of Stephen King with us. Enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the King Zone's Book Club podcast, a spinoff of the King Zone podcast, where Bede Germain and Super Marcy discuss the film and TV adaptations of Stephen King's work. The Book Club podcast focuses on his short stories and novellas. I am Stephen T. Boltz, and with me, as always, is the aforementioned Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy.
Hello, hello. Good to be back. And as promised, we are back within that 2-month time frame. So very happy with that.
See, we can do this.
We can know do how this. To do it. Yeah.
All right. Hey, good. With us today, we have our first guest on the show. I'm very excited. This is cool. A shared co-host.
Yes.
We both work with this dude, as mentioned with you on the King Zone podcast, as well as, like, what else? What are the other 9 things you have?
We have the Super Podcast, the Ozfloyd Cast, Podcasters of Horror, the To Be Tuesdays podcast. I don't think I'm missing any of the Super Network shows there now.
Very good. And also my co-host on Bede and Steve versus Camp Crystal Lake, as well as Bede versus the Living Dead. Bede, Germain.
Hey, guys. Actually just been busy with all these shows that we're all doing. Although my podcast, Bede versus the Living Dead, or at least at the time of this recording, is on a bit of a break, only till about early February, so I can take a bit of time off and sort of organize the next year of the podcast. So yeah, that's been going pretty good. And also at least at the time, you and I, Steve, have had recorded 2 episodes of Bede and Steve versus Camp Crystal Lake that are going to both be dropping in January. And also, Marcy, you and I have been recording a bunch of stuff too, so
yes, it's busy recording month. So yeah, people, you'll be hearing episodes that were recorded throughout January. Timeframes won't make sense, but you get the episodes when they're scheduled. So there you go.
Our theme today, and this is the reason Bede is joining us for this one, we're looking at Stephen King's zombie stories, Home Delivery, as well as The Return of Timmy Baderman. Home Delivery was originally published in Book of the Dead, an anthology of horror stories, first published in 1989 and edited by the great John Skip and Craig Spector. It was later collected in King's Nightmares and Dreamscapes in 1983 and has actually been adapted by artist Glenn Chadbourne for the book The Secretary of Dreams, which is a collection of comics based on King's short fiction, released in 2006 by Cemetery Dance. So, Marcy, give us a short synopsis of Home Delivery.
Home Delivery introduces the main character, Maddie Pace, and she's a person who is more decisive than I am. So I kind of related to her on that level. she's living on a small island town that they call Jenny, and she tells us it's the end of everything. She's pregnant and she's also a widow.
This was an odd story. An interesting story, a good story, but you guys know I'm a structure monkey, so this was my big thing. This one, I sort of got stuck on the structure, but before we go into any of that, Bede, what did you think of Home Delivery?
Well, I've heard about Home Delivery for a little while now, given that it is one of the few zombie stories that Stephen King has written. And then the last time you and I, Steve, got together to talk about one of those zombie stories was when we talked about Cell on an episode of The King Zone.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that was kind of like a full-fledged novel take on that subgenre, this one being more of a short story. And having just read it, like, I had an idea what to expect, but it was, at the same time, it wasn't what I expected, mainly because I thought most of the story would be set around the character of Maddie. But what I sort of didn't realize is that the story kind of it's pretty ambitious what King does with the story, because not only does he focus on the character of Maddie and her relationship with her abusive husband, but it also kind of shows the small town vibe of Jenny on this small island. But also, once the zombie outbreak happens, we kind of flash to other areas in the world, including the White House, and we even have an entire section in space as well. So I thought, given that this would be, you know, be a short story, it'll just focus on a couple of characters, kind of similar to Night of the Living Dead in that regard. But in the course of this story, you know, King basically is showing so many different points of view, which at the same time I both admire, but at the same time I think for me as a reader, it kind of loses focus away from the Maddie character, because that whole main plot is what I found the most interesting, that it's again what we know with King as a writer. He knows how to flesh out these great characters and create these very human stories that just happen to have a lot of horrific supernatural events that happen around them. So when it does focus on Maddie, to me, that was where it was most compelling. And the stuff when it focuses outside of that, while still enjoyable, I feel like it kind of lessens more of the impact we would have had with Maddie's character and her journey throughout the story.
I have nothing left to say. Bede, you said exactly what I was going to say. With the head hopping between Maddie and the townsfolk and the cemetery and in space, it becomes epic, which I didn't mind the epic. It was the point of view. There was a meeting where it was only the men. So Maddie wasn't even allowed to be involved in this. And that took me right out, right? That was one of those moments that you're talking about there, Bede. And the confrontation in space was almost the same. I didn't know whose point of view were we witnessing that from. There were a lot of people who had recorded it across the world. And it was disseminated then throughout, you know, different channels, and people were hearing it. But I don't recall any one character in the story experiencing listening to it. Do you remember any of that, Marcy?
The way I read it, it was because I felt like the story was like from Maddie's kind of point of view. So even when it goes to the other townsfolk, it feels like they're recounting something to her, and that's what we're getting. So with that space stuff, for me, it felt like that was her trying to piece the things together, because we also do get like a thing about the zombies attacking at the White House on the radio or something like that. Like, oh, the president is a zombie. But for me, as I found it, it was like Maddie was kind of retelling the story. So from that point, we find out that her husband's abusive, that she pretty much went with someone who was very like her father and stuff like that. So we get a bit of that, but we find out that the husband died by drowning at sea. And as we kind of going in, like, that's not so much the main story. It is the zombies that are there, but this is like H.P. Lovecraft, cosmic horror type of stuff with like alien worms that have infiltrated, come to Earth, and they turn you into the Living Dead, which Bede knows quite well. And then we kind of get to the chaos, and so much shit is going on within that town, obviously. But still, we go back to Maddie, because then she deals with her returning zombie husband, who is very hungry. But then it goes to maybe it's her baby that is helping her fight by kicking. She's feeling the kicking in the womb. So it lends to, is this meant to be a female survival story? Like, what was King going for with how this kind of goes? It's a little confusing, but I did enjoy it. And much like with you two, that sort of different point of view thing was a bit jarring. But as I went into the story from the first paragraph, like, for me, I'm like, okay, this is Maddie's story. It's her mind, her point of view. This is what, these are things she's kind of been told or has thought has happened, kind of thing. But yeah, that was my perspective on it.
And this is a precursor to the female survival stories that you mentioned, Dolores Claiborne, Gerald's Game, Rose Matter, but even Carrie is one of those. This is something he's always very good at. Maybe you mentioned the chaos and that jumped out to me. Maybe the head hopping here, the various points of view, was meant to give us a bit of chaos as a reader as well. That's what I felt.
Yeah. Okay. I definitely felt that. I don't know if, did you feel it was chaotic as well during the big stuff with the townsfolk and the confrontations and all of that, Bede?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You got a sense of that during the course of the story, because you can see, like, with this whole event of this zombie apocalypse is happening and how it's starting to affect everyone in this small island community. Like, they're not sure what they have to do. So pretty much, like, once they do figure out a plan to keep the zombies under control so they don't rise up and start killing everyone on the island, like, yeah, their methods do work, but it does get a bit chaotic to a point where even, like, one of the men in charge of the posse, he fears, like, he's going to have a heart attack and die at any moment. And then he even says to three of his men to make sure he doesn't come back as one of those things, put a shotgun at one of my ears, another one on my heart, and another one under my
armpit.
And make and shoot at the same time so I don't come back as those things.
Yeah. It's very full on. And I think with it being set on like an island town as well, we're getting these bits of information from Maddie to tell this story. But you'd imagine if you're on a small town and this was happening, it would be like what Maddie's doing to us, just that tiny little bits of information that we can try and gather. But it probably helped as well with my enjoyment of this was by the time this episode drops, this episode I'm about to mention will have already been out. But with prepping for that, watching the Twilight Zone episode, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, that chaoticness was like, that is so like that as well. And it's just leading more into, I think King had a bit of influence from the Twilight Zone, I feel.
Oh, definitely. Like, it's definitely the type of story that would play very well on the Twilight Zone. I know the story has been adapted before. I mean, even I think back in the mid-2000s, Guillermo del Toro was a producer on a short animated version of the story, which I'm very curious to check out. And I know they were going to do a film adaptation of it as well, but it just never got around to being made. But yeah, it's definitely the type of story that could easily be used in an anthology. Like, even though it does have that sort of epic scope to it, like, you could easily kind of just focus on sort of the main elements with the character of Maddie, and that would be a perfect, like, 30 to 1 hour episode of a TV show. But of course, you know, having all that other stuff there, like, if you wanted to expand that into a feature, you could easily do that. But to me, like I said before, what makes the story at least work overall for me is the main plot with Maddie. Because again, like, she's a very compelling character dealing with this abusive husband, and the fact that he comes back from the dead to kill her. And it is a very, that all that stuff is compelling. And also at the very end, what I find interesting too is, like, even though it basically is the end of the world with the zombie uprising, the character of Maddie, after getting rid of her husband once and for all, feels like she has hope and purpose and will do anything to protect her child. So in a way, it's like also kind of an inspiring story as well. So
that's one of the things I liked about it too, that the problem, like, the zombies were universal, but the stakes were local, like, very local for her. It was her baby. And I thought that was neat. That was an interesting way to bring us into the story. We're introduced to her straight away, and the story goes for quite a long time with her background. Her father was abusive, the story of her mother, how she met Jack, her husband. And you get to a point where you're thinking, wait, wasn't this a zombie story? Because I'm invested in her story. And you know she's pregnant and you know she's widowed. So when the zombies hit, you firmly established the story that you're telling, which is her. And then he takes a break and he's like, okay, now for this word from, you know, outer space. And we get that story. And when it comes back, the final confrontation is between Maddie and zombie Jack. It does bookend it nicely. So even though the structure sort of is all over the place, it's got this great bookend with Maddie in the beginning being completely indecisive about even the littlest things, buying a can of soup, to the end, as you said, being very hopeful and decisive. I thought it was great.
In terms of the story arc that we see her go through, like, that really, really works. I think in telling the story, it gets a little bit disjointed in the middle, but yeah, overall, I think it was quite a compelling story and I really, really liked Maddie.
I wonder if it might not have worked better as a novella and just gone longer. Just dive right into it, Steve, and keep going with it. But it was good. I also liked the way it was set firmly in the Well, I was going to call it the King Zone, but that name appears to be taken. It's set firmly in the King universe. Okay. He mentions Selena St. George as a writer who had come from the island. She mostly writes political things, I think he said. She's a character from Dolores Claiborne. And also mentions Inside View as the first American media outlet to report on the zombie outbreak in Thumper, Florida. Inside View goes as far back as The Dead Zone in 1979, and it's appeared in Bag of Bones, Joyland, Dr. Sleep, Billy Summers, and most recently in 2022 in the novel Fairy Tale. So I love this. I love that it's all firmly rooted there. So, Bede, what are your final thoughts on home delivery?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty solid zombie story, and it does have a pretty compelling character at the center of it, and it finds an interesting way to tell this very human story in a zombie world. And King, being a master when it comes to creating characters, he does that very well here with the character of Maddie. But at the same time, though, like, you can definitely see, like, he has wants to kind of expand it as well, hence with all the other sort of elements that are around it with the other townsfolk and also the government and what's happening in space. So to me, even though those elements were fun, but it kind of took away a bit from Maddie's story overall. So if I had to give this a rating out of 5, I give it a solid 3.5 out of 5.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Marcy, what about yourself?
I quite liked it, but yeah, again, I could see this, like, King could expand this and be like one of those books where you're telling a story, but he obviously wants to explore other characters. So each chapter, a different character's point of view type of thing, like that could be very interesting. So I think there is potential for this to be expanded upon, or as mentioned, if someone adapts it into something full length, that could probably work as well. But yeah, I give this one 3.5. I hope my zombie dead husband does not come back and try to eat me out of 5. Same score as you, Bede, and pretty much like I think my thoughts kind of echo with what Bede has said as well. It's got a compelling like main character. It's a very interesting story. It's a different-ish take from what the normal might be with zombies, which you can appreciate that more cosmic horror. You can see the like Lovecraft influence, and we've seen that several times already on this show in the stories we've read. So that's definitely there as well.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page here. I got to go 3.5 as well. And I think we all did read it in Nightmares and Dreamscapes.
Yes. You know,
nobody
yes.
has a copy yes. of Book of the Dead laying around.
I'm intrigued to find to read that now, though. I'm not going to lie.
I have one. It's still with all of my stuff back in Pennsylvania. Nice. But I have a first edition hardcover of that one. Nice. It's a great book. And actually, that leads me into our next story with a surprising connection, which I'll get to in just a moment. The Return of Timmy Baderman was originally published in June 1983 in the Satyricon 2 program book. Satyricon, also known as Deep South Con, was a convention held in the states of the former Confederacy. This was published just in the program book, not as a collection of short stories or anything necessarily. It was later published as a chapter in Pet Sematary, though it seems to be an excerpt from the book rather than a short story that was included or expanded into the novel. But most recently, it was published in an anthology called Zombies, Encounters with the Hungry Dead, edited by John Skip, who was also editor of Book of the Dead. So the fact that John Skip is involved in both of these today, I thought that was really cool.
Well, John Skip came up a lot when I covered the book Knights of the Living Dead, an anthology, on an episode of Bede vs. the Living Dead, because he also contributed a story to that book. But I also knew through my research, he also compiled Book of the Dead and a few others, and he's also a filmmaker, writer in his own right as well.
Let's go into the story. Marcy, leaving Pet Sematary, everything that came before it and after it in the book, leaving all that out, how does this work as a short story?
So as we look at it, the return of Timmy Baderman is a conversation between two men called Lewis and Judd. And Judd is recounting a story of a man who died at war, but then roamed the streets after his funeral. It is a very creepy story. If you, again, leaving the Pet Sematary stuff out of it, it is a very creepy story. You're wondering, why is this guy recounting such a macabre story? It seems like this young man went to war, died, had a funeral, they buried a body, but this strange version of him is back, and it's very unsettling, and everybody in the town has no idea what's going on. They even bring up, well, the government's going to be, or the army's going to be interested in this because he was reported dead. Like, it's that kind of thing. And again, without any kind of context as to what's going on, you're left wondering what's caused this to happen. I found it a really good, like, little short page turner.
Yeah, like a little vignette almost, because you don't know the context.
Yeah, when you look at it in that way, you don't know the context, and you see a word like Wendigo, and then that furthers your like curiosity, like, oh, what is happening? Is it specific to this town? Is this just something that happens? It has a lot of like questions that are there. So yeah, it is definitely a very compelling story, but I can't exactly leave the Pet Sematary stuff behind. I do know who the characters are. I do know Judd, and I do quite enjoy the film. So I did hear that voice in my head. And by the end of the story, I'm like, no wonder Judd says sometimes dead is better.
You've got to read this in Fred Gwynne's voice. You can't, yes. You can't not. That's absolutely, absolutely true. Bede, how did you find it?
It's kind of interesting reading this story outside of Pet Sematary. Now, I'm sort of more familiar with the story, how it's used in the film versions of Pet Sematary. So it was kind of interesting to kind of go back and read just that section alone in its literary entirety. So it was interesting, but like Marcy says, even though, yeah, I'm already familiar who the characters of Judd and Lewis are, like, I try to sort of think of it in a way, like, without knowing or even hearing about Pet Sematary, does this story work without the knowledge that this is a small part of a much bigger story? And I would say it does work. Like, I think the only thing that kind of works against it is that I feel like it probably would have been better if it didn't sort of structure it in a way like Judd talking to Lewis about it. But to be fair, this is part of a book, so it would make sense those interactions would be there. But I think on a story on its own, I feel like it probably would have had more impact if it was just Judd narrating the story. Mm. But that being said, though, the story on its own is very creepy, especially with how it kind of sets up the character of Timmy Bateman, with him wandering around this town and just kind of imagining in my mind these scenes of Timmy Bateman just like walking around, shrugging, and it just gives you a very creepy feeling, especially when characters kind of see him from a distance, or if they interact with him, because every interaction that everyone has with Timmy Bateman, other than the fact that they're kind of shocked that, I mean, he was just buried, why is he alive? But just the sight of him, like, sends chills down their spine. And, of course, once Judd and his friends go to the Bateman house to confront his dad about Timmy, and then they have that scene where Timmy pretty much tells all these men all their deep, dark secrets. It's just a very chilling moment. And it's interesting because the story has, there's a lot of areas it doesn't explain, like how Timmy came back from the dead. I mean, yes, we know now, given that there was a whole novel about it.
Right.
But in this, if you're reading the story on its own, you're like, how did this come about? And the only thing you can think of is the Wendigo part, because that's something that has been creeping up a lot in film, TV, and literature, and even just in popular culture in the past 20 years. So that definitely adds that layer, but also even kind of leaving some things unanswered, like what happened between Timmy and his dad to want his dad to kill Timmy, kill himself, and then set the house on fire.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you'd imagine that obviously there's something wrong with Timmy Bateman. He's not meant to be alive. And you can imagine that you're living with something that's not meant to be alive. You can imagine like that house would have been on fire and them killed after a few days, especially with Timmy like yelling everybody's secrets out in the open. Like, you get the idea, you do not want to be around this undead Timmy Bateman. Yeah.
It's going to take a toll. And it did. I mean, when the men go to the house, they see Bill and he looks like he's lost 40 pounds. You know, he's just basically given up. He's practically insane himself. So I imagine that was just going to happen regardless. Mm. He was going to have to end this at some point. Mm. And it was pretty horrifying. The thing that I really dig about this story, Timmy has returned from the dead, but it may in fact not be Timmy. Like with Timmy knowing everybody's dark secrets, that could be he's been to hell and he's seen everything. And I'll accept that. That's perfectly fine. Mm. But there's a passage in the story, and I can't find it, and I didn't write it down, and I should have. There's an implication that it's not Timmy, that Timmy himself is gone, and that something else is inhabiting him.
And I think that's where we get the Wendigo part, is you can kind of think, well, if it doesn't feel like this is Timmy, and it shouldn't be because he's dead, is it this spirit of, say, a Wendigo or something that is possessing this undead body, dead body, I guess?
yeah. The only thing in the story that sort of suggests anything, yes, it does mention the Micmac and it does mention the Wendigo, but only in passing.
Only in passing, yeah.
The thing I loved about the movie, and this is me after saying, forget about Pet Sematary and just look at this, is the way the story starts. He says, it was the rag man who told me about the place. So Judd is telling his own story, his experience with the Micmac burial ground, with his dog Spot, having buried Spot and brought him back to life. And that's sort of the preamble to the Timmy Baderman story. Mm. So you know that he took his dog to the Micmac burial ground, brought the dog back, the dog was changed, and that was bad. So now when we hear about Timmy Baderman, we know that's not going to end well. Mm. The context of the story is, of course, Judd warning Lewis not to bury his son in the Pet Sematary, but we don't get that context in the short story. We've just got a guy telling another guy a creepy story. The story starts just with Judd talking immediately about Timmy's body being returned from the war, which also is great. You know, I've nothing against that. There's the implication in the beginning. Judd mentions that Bill's wife, Bill Baderman's wife, had been dead 10 years along with the second child she tried to bring into the world. And that perhaps if the child had not died, Bill would have been okay. Bill would not have buried Timmy in the burial ground, because he says to Lewis, you yourself have another child and a wife. So there's something there suggesting that Lewis lost someone recently. So I think you can get it with that little bit of context that this is a warning. But you don't get the whole thing. The only thing Judd mentions is when they say to Bill, you've been messing around up in them woods. That could be anything in the story. It's not framed with a burial ground of any kind. And it could be witchcraft. It could be cosmic horror. We could have another Necronomicon story going on here. It could be really anything. And that's one thing I like about this, is that is left completely unanswered. If you didn't know Pet Sematary and you just read this story and could put two and two together as you're reading, I think that would be really impactful. But I'm not sure, if you're not familiar with the book or anything, I think it's a really solid short story, but it might leave too many questions. I'm not sure how many readers could put that together.
Mm. Oh, definitely. Like it's kind of like, again, what I said before, like knowing that this is part of a much bigger story, try to disassociate yourself from that. It is quite difficult, but like, even though as effective as the story it is, and there's a lot of creepy things, but again, it's the way how it's written, as you can obviously tell that, oh, there's a much bigger story here and you kind of just want more. And hence why I kind of feel like maybe instead of doing this in the style of Judd talking to Lewis about this as a standalone thing, it could have just been Judd narrating the story on his own without it being a conversation with Lewis. Mm.
Yeah, see, I think the conversation with Lewis, maybe that's what I'm feeling. Like Judd telling his story, starting with Spot, telling his story and his experience with Timmy Baderman, that's a story. Telling just the Timmy Baderman story without Lewis, I think you would get lost. I think you wouldn't have a point to the story. He's just telling you something that happened once, but without a greater context. I don't know. The fact is, it is a chapter from a book. It was written as a chapter from the book. That's how it was published in Satyricon as well. It was taken from the book. It's not like the Revelations of Becca Paulson, which was a short story that had been published previous and then reworked as a subplot in the Tommyknockers. This is something that was just taken out and brought over here. Maybe that's why bits of it work and bits of it don't. But I would really like to see it rewritten as a short story, how that would affect it, how that would work. What would you need to change to give it a complete arc, a complete story? Because even the chapter in the book, it goes on for a couple of more paragraphs with Judd literally warning Lewis, don't bury your son in the pet cemetery. It finishes it up. Whereas working as a warning, reading what was in Satyricon cuts off just before the warning. So just before the actual ending. And I don't know, that sort of left me hanging. I know where it goes and I know what happens. But again, trying to look at it on its own was a little more difficult without filling in those blanks. Yeah.
And also I was expecting like the famous quote from the Pet Cemetery novel, sometimes dead is better, to be kind of the closing line of this story. But we didn't get that. And I was very
upset.
That's why I had to add it in my little bit before.
I know, it's so good. And really, I mean, bless him, I would have loved an audio of this read by Fred Gwynne. How great would that have been?
That would have been amazing. You know,
I think the new movie Pet Cemetery Bloodlines is just an adaptation of the Timmy Baderman story. So it's a prequel to the remake of Pet Cemetery. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's essentially the Timmy Baderman story turned into a movie.
I haven't seen it yet, but I do believe we are going to be discussing it on the King Zone some point this year.
Yeah, because
since it is adapted from this, it counts more than, say, sometimes they come back to. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I'm looking forward to that. And as much as I absolutely detested the remake of Pet Cemetery, I kind of want to see this movie to see what they've done with the Timmy Baderman story. And because it's David Duchovny, and that's always fun. So in the end, what are your thoughts on this one, Marcy?
I give this one a 4. I really wish we had the Fred Gwynne audio version of this out of 5. It was going through my head, like that was the voice in my head while reading the whole story, and it works beautifully. But just as a section of what I know is a bigger story, taking that away from it, I think it's a very intriguing and well-written piece. And knowing it is part of a bigger story intrigues me to actually read the book, which I haven't done. We know I haven't done that yet. It is on the list of things I want to do this year. Finally read the whole thing, and having obviously seen both the film versions and liking one a hell of a lot more than the other one. We know which that is. But yeah, it was good to read this. And again, like Pet Cemetery is a very strange kind of zombie-ish thing anyway. And it is definitely more ambiguous just to read this because you're not quite sure what Timmy Baderman could be. So yeah, definitely really enjoyed it.
All right. 4 out of 5. Beat.
Yeah, I'm going to give this 4. Oh, don't go down there now, Lewis. You don't want to go down there. 5. Like, it is a pretty solid short story on its own. Like, it does, I do have issues in the way that it's structured. I feel like it probably would have been better if it was kind of done in the first person with just Judd narrating the story rather than him having a conversation with the Lewis character, especially knowing that this is part of a much bigger story. But on its own, it is still a genuinely creepy tale. That definitely doesn't give all the answers, but that's what kind of also makes it effective as a standalone piece, because you're kind of wondering, why is Timmy the way he is? Is he actually Timmy? Is he not Timmy? But all those things are not answered within this short story. Obviously, they're answered in the book, but in the short story itself, that ambiguity actually makes it much more interesting and unsettling as a whole. So yeah, 4 out of 5.
Okay. Once again, we're all on the same page. I've got to give this 1 4. I think, yeah, of course, it's going to have its limitations. It's like picking up any chapter out of It or The Dead Zone or The Shining and trying to rate that as a short story in its own. But it does work on more levels than it doesn't, I found. So 4 out of 5 all across the board. This was a lot more agreeable discussion than I thought we were going to have. I thought there'd be at least some dissension in the ranks, but no, look at this. Here we go. That wraps it up for us. We're hopefully going to be back, Marcy, in another 2 months.
Because we have a lot of podcasts going on, but that's the idea. You hopefully see us within 6 to 8 weeks every time with this podcast. So yeah.
We don't want to jinx ourselves on that one, but I can say that we're going to go back to Skeleton Crew with this one and look at the two stories that are linked in that collection. We're looking at Morning Deliveries, Milkman Number 1, and Big Wheels, A Tale of the Laundry Game, Milkman Number 2. So that'll be fun. Bede, where can people find you online this week?
Well, if people want to find me personally, they can find me on my official Twitter page at twitter.com/BedeJamine. You can also find me on Blue Sky under BedeJamine as well. And also you can find all my work over at supermarcy.com, including all the awesome podcasts that I co-host with Super Marcy. And also you can listen to my solo podcast, Bede vs. the Living Dead, and as well as its spin-off show, Bede and Steve vs. Camp Crystal Lake, which I host with some guy named Steve. I don't know if you guys know of him. Luckily, he's not on this show, or maybe I'm not sure. But anyways, though, both of those shows can be listened on all podcast streamers everywhere via the Bede vs. the Living Dead podcast feed. And you can find all information on both shows via the official Twitter and Blue Sky accounts under Bede vs. TLD, and also the Facebook page under Bede vs. the Living Dead.
And Marcy.
Yes, you can find me personally as Super Marcy on all your major social platforms such as Twitter, Instagram, I can't even remember all of them, Blue Sky, Threads, there's so many, and I'm Super_Marcy on Letterboxd, so there is that. And as far as this podcast goes, we are under the Kingzone podcast feed on all the podcast streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts and the like. And you can also find relative links for supermarcy.com and the Super Network, including those socials, at the link tree, which just type in linktr.ee/thesupernetwork.
Very good. Okay. And if anyone's interested, you can find me over at forcesofgeek.com, where I have a column called Creepshows and Fright Nights, a look back at 80s horror. Find me, as Bede mentioned, on Bede and Steve versus Camp Crystal Lake, or over on Letterboxd, where I am Fulci Rama. I have been Stephen T. Bolt. I want to thank my excellent co-host, Super Marcy, and our guest, our first and most excellent guest, Bede Jermyn. Thank you, and we will see you next time. Bye, everyone.
See ya.
Bye-bye.